Good morning, everyone. After a long time, so nice to be together here like this. So we are, last week also we tried, and we want to improve our trial today, to film and record this session. So that means I will be taking readers, I'll be going around the room like this and inviting people to read. And Suresh will be coming with a microphone to record you as you read, or if you ask a question. If you want to ask a question, please put up your hand, and then we'll try and record your question also. So last week we went back to where we had stopped in March, and we completed the reading of Book 7, Canto 4, the book which is about the triple soul forces. These cantos are telling the story of Savitri. We are no longer reading about the sadhana and the exploration of King Asvapati. We are reading about Savitri's yoga. So this search for the soul, this is her search. And way back then, we read about how she started, how she embarked on that search, and then what has happened to her on the way. So this is Book 7, Canto 4. We'll be starting to read on page 522, the new canto, The Finding of the Soul. Would you like to start, Zach, since we're going this way around the circle? Okay, Eugen, would you read, please?
Sure. The Finding of the Soul. Onward she passed, seeing the soul's mystic cave. At first, she stepped into a night of love, a light of strength that helps the laboring world, the power that stumbles in our life. This inefficient mind gave up its hope, the striving heart its unprevailing hope. All knowledge failed and the ideas formed, and wisdom freed all her lowly hand, feeling a truth too great for thought or speech. Formless, ineffable, forever listening, and innocent and wholly ignorant, adored like one worshipped formless God. The unseen light she could not claim nor know. In a simple purity of emptiness, her mind knelt down before the unknown. All was polished, save her naked self, and the prostrate yearning of her surrendered heart. There was no strength, no pride for the lofty burning of desire had sunk. Ashamed, the vanity of separate self, the hope of spiritual greatness, salvation she asked not, nor for her crown. Humility seemed not too proud to escape. Herself was not, God alone was. Yet God she knew, not but only knew he was. The sacred garden rooted now within. The world was a deep darkness, great, and in this void held more than all the teeming world. This blank felt more than all that time has borne. All that time has borne. This dark new dungeon, whence we the unknown, but all was formless, voiceless, as mighty a shadow walk in a shadowy sea, a small knot passing through the mightier knot, a night person in a bare outline, crossing a fathomless impersonal line. Silence she moved.
Thank you. We can quietly read through this passage, and if anyone has any questions, they can raise their hands and we'll try and deal with it.
You don't want to read it through fully first? Or you did already?
Just this page? Do you want to read through the whole canto?
I don't know, it's just that this is what we're used to.
I think we can read it passage by passage. A single page is maybe enough to absorb and see whether anybody has any questions. The state which is described here is one which probably we are not very familiar with, but it's one which has been described by many mystics of when they approach, are coming near to the finding of the soul. They come into this state of a cloud of unknowing. So for Savitri too, this light, this normal light that we see that helps the laboring world to continue, is quenched. Power that struggles and stumbles in our life is also quenched. The inefficient mind gave up its thoughts, and the striving heart its unavailing hopes. All those hopes of the heart seem now to be meaningless and useless. All knowledge fail and the ideas fall. Even wisdom screened in awe her lowly head. There's no feeling of having any wisdom or knowledge because she is feeling the presence of a truth that is too great for thought or speech. So Savitri's own psychological state is like an innocent and holy ignorance, which is adoring, worshipping, like one who worships formless God. The unseen light she could not claim nor own. She senses its presence but cannot identify it. In a simple purity of emptiness, her mind knelt down before the unknowable, what cannot be known. Everything was abolished except her naked self. She exists somehow, and in that existence there is the prostrate yearning of her surrendered heart, this longing of the surrendered heart to be united with the One. There was no strength in her, no pride or force. The lofty burning of desire had sunk a shame, a vanity of separate self, something that claims to have a separate existence. That's not wished for. Salvation, she asked not, nor a heavenly crown. Humanity, just being a human being, seemed now too proud a state. Sorry, humility? Humanity, I've got in my book, but your books are probably correct. Yes, I'm sorry. You've got a little old books. Yes, yes. I'm also reading from the 1972 edition, but here in the 93 edition, it says indeed humility. So I think this is the correct reading. Humility, even that humility which she's feeling, seems now too proud a state. She herself was nothing. God alone was all. Yet God she knew not, but only knew he was, that he exists, that she is sure of. A sacred darkness brooded now within. The world was a deep darkness, great and new. This void, this emptiness, held more than all the teeming worlds, the world so full of life and creatures. This emptiness holds more than all that. This blank felt more than all that time has borne, has carried and suffered. This dark, new, dumbly, immensely, the unknown. There is a way of knowing the unknown and the unknowable, but it can only be done in this silence, in this blankness. Not with the mind, not with the heart, not with any of the senses. This dark, new, dumbly, immensely, the unknown. But all was formless, voiceless, infinite, as might a shadow walk in a shadowy scene, a small naught passing through a mightier naught, a night of person in a bare outline, crossing a fathomless, impersonal night. Silent she moved, empty and absolute. Naught means nothing. Naught, it's this figure zero. In endless time, her soul reached a wide end. The spaceless vast became her spirit's place. Patty, would you read?
The vast a change approached. The emptiness broke. A wave rippled within. The world had stirred. Once more, her inner self became her space. There was felt a blissful nearness to the goal. Heaven leaned low to kiss the sacred hill. The air trembled with passion and delight. A rose of splendor on a tree of dreams. The face of dawn out of moon twilight grew. Day came, priest of a sacrifice of joy, into the worshiping silence of her world. Carried immortal luster. scar, wore as his vermilion caste mark a red sun. As if an old remembered dream come true, she recognized in her prophetic mind the imperishable luster of that sky, the tremulous sweetness of that happy air, covered from mind's view and life's approach, the mystic cavern in the sacred hill, and knew the dwelling of her secret soul. As if in some Elysian occult depth, truth's last retreat from thought's profaning touch, as if in a rock temple solitude hid, God's refuge from an ignorant worshipping world. It lay within, it lay withdrawn, even from life's inner sense, receding from the entangled heart's desire. A marvelous brooding twilight met the eyes, and a holy stillness held that voiceless space.
Shall we stop there? This is the approach to the soul's dwelling, that inner experience of nothingness which she was having at the beginning changes. She becomes aware of her own inner self and immediately feels that she's very near to this goal which she's been seeking for so long. It feels as if heaven is leaning down to bless the sacred hill, and a kind of dawn comes out of that darkness. A rose of splendor on a tree of dreams, the face of dawn out of mooned twilight grew. And then the next step, day. Day came. The poet describes him like a priest. He's got a wonderful purple scarf and wore as his vermilion caste mark a red sun. The day itself is the priest of this sacrifice. Day came. Priest of a sacrifice of joy into the worshipping silence of her world. And with him, he carries this immortal luster, this shining light of immortality. He trails the whole of heaven like a purple scarf, like a Vaishnava priest, and wore as his vermilion caste mark a red sun, this bindi here, bright scarlet. And somehow this is familiar to Savitri, as if an old remembered dream come true. She recognized in her prophetic mind the imperishable luster of that sky, the tremulous sweetness of that happy air. It's familiar. And covered from mind's view and life's approach, the mystic cavern in the sacred hill, and knew the dwelling of her secret soul. It seems this mystic cavern to be in some Elysian occult depth, a deep, secret, heavenly place, which is truth's last retreat from thought's profaning touch. If thought tries to touch that truth, it would spoil it. It would harm it in some way. So it's like a rock temple. We have such rock temples here in India. Particularly, I've heard about one on the way to Jinji, where sometimes the ashram young people used to trek there. And I've heard about this place where you can enter into the rock temple and see the deity there. So this is some similar experience. As if in a rock temple's solitude hid, God's refuge from an ignorant worshipping world, it lay withdrawn even from life's inner sense, receding, moving away from the entangled heart's desire. A marvelous brooding twilight met the eyes, and a holy stillness held that voiceless space. Anandi?
An awful dimness wrapped the grey cloth walls, carved the massive stone of my temple. Two golden serpents dwelled in the cold and golden sight, enveloping it with a pure and lovely sky. Look up, with wisdom's peak and wings, an eagle covered with white falcon wings, flames of self-locking wire, doves crowd. Great news. souls need to be entered in and found herself and great figures to call, conscious in stone and living without blood. Watching with fixed regard to a woman, executive figure of the god itself, world symbols, the movement potency. On the walls covered with significant shapes, look at her, the life seen in Manambis, and the high meaning of the life of gods. The power and necessity of this numberless world, first being and stretched, the world's face, told the succinct and inexhaustible hieratic message, the kingdom of the climbing place. In their immensity of city, time and infinity, they were the extension of the self of God, and housed in passively receiving all, his figures and his small and mighty acts, and his passion and his birth and life and death, and his return to immortality, to the abiding and eternal state climb, to the pure existence everywhere the same, to the sheer consciousness and the absolute force, and the unimaginable and formless bliss, the mere in time and the timeless mystery of the true being who is all and one. And yet, no one himself. There was no step of breathing man, no sound, only the living nearness of the soul.
Thank you. So this description comes in a very pictorial way, no? We can really imagine all these different things that Savitri is seeing. And if we look in the books or in the gallery at Huta's paintings, there it has been depicted in some detail. First of all, we are outside. There's an awful dimness. Awful here means awe-inspiring, a kind of dimness that arouses awe in our hearts, deep reverence. We can recognize, we can feel immediately that this is the entrance to a sacred space, and that entrance has been carved in the massive stone of matter's trance. It represents an entrance into the subtle worlds, leaving the material worlds. This is a borderline between the two. And guarding that entrance are two golden serpents. They've wrapped themselves around the lintel, the beam or the top of the entrance. And there they are looking out into the world with wisdom's deep and luminous eyes. And also still on the outside is carved an eagle, a bird of victory, the bird that can look straight at the sun without blinking because of its power of vision. An eagle covered it with wide conquering wings. And then there are many doves, white doves. They look like white flames, flames of beings or flames that are musing in immobile reverie. They're not flying around. It's as if they're silent and still there, brooding. Doves are crowding all these outcrops of the rock like sculptured postures of white bosom peace. The dove is a symbol of peace. So Savitri enters. She steps across the threshold. That's always a very important movement when we cross from the outside to the inside, you know, across the threshold. Savitri enters into the cave and finds herself amid great figures of gods, as if they've been carved in the walls of this rock cave. But they are conscious. Although they are made of stone, they are conscious in stone. Although they're made of stone, they are living without breath. They are watching. These gods are watching with fixed regard the soul of man. They are executive figures of the cosmic self. They are there to implement the will of the One. They are world symbols of immutable potency, unchanging power. And on these walls, these rock walls, there are many carvings and perhaps paintings on the walls covered with significant shapes. It's as if they're looking out at her. There are the life scenes of man, of human beings, and of animals. And these are significant shapes. They tell a story, each of them. So some are telling about the high meaning of the life of gods and the power and necessity for these numberless worlds, each of which has a role to play in the universe. And there are faces of beings and stretches of world space as if landscapes, but they're all speaking with a message. All these figures and shapes are speaking the succinct and inexhaustible hieratic message of the climbing plane. Succinct means compressed, made short, or expressed in a short way. But this message which they are expressing in their short way by their little images is inexhaustible. It's the message which King Aswapati received when he first entered the subtle worlds and was shown the world stair. It's the hieratic message, the secret message known only to initiates of the climbing planes and the numberless worlds, each of which has its message and mission. These pictures all together give an immense message. It's huge, which is signing, it's a symbol for an indication of limitlessness, of infinity. And these images are extensions of the self of God. And as such, they are housing, they're giving a home to his figures, the figures of God, his small and his mighty acts, his passion, his suffering, and his birth and life and death, and his return to immortality. These are the figures of the self of God. So all these things are indicating an ascent, a climb to the abiding and eternal. What remains, what does not decay. They climb towards the pure existence, which is everywhere the same, the sun, to the sheer consciousness and the absolute force and the unimaginable and formless bliss. So they are combining and expressing the facets of Sat, Chit and Ananda. They express the mirth in time, the laughter, and the timeless mystery of that triune being, Sat, Chit, Ananda, who is all and one, and yet is no one but himself, Appa. All this is expressed in a very meaningful, living way by the interior of this space which is entered into like a rock temple, with frescoes and carvings on the wall. But these are living forms. There was no step of breathing men, no sound, only the living nearness of the soul. One, who do you read?
Yet all the worlds and God himself were there, for every symbol was a reality and brought the present which had given it life. All this she saw and inly felt you, and knew not by some thought of mine, but by the self. A light not born of sun or moon or fire, a light that dwelt within and saw within, shedding an intimate visibility, made secrecy more revealing than the world. Our sight and sense are variable gaze and touch, and only the spirit's vision is wholly true. As thus she passed in that mysterious place, through room and room, through door and rock-hewn door, she felt herself made one with all she saw. A sealed identity within her womb, she knew herself the beloved of the Supreme. These gods and goddesses were he and she. The mother was she of beauty and delight. The world in Brahma's vast creating place. The world puissance on almighty Shiva's lip. The master and the mother of all lives, watching
the worlds their twin vigor had made. And Krishna and Radha, forever entwined in bliss, the adorer and adored, self-lost and one. In the last chamber, on a golden seat, one said, whose shape no vision could define. Only one felt the world's unattainable fount, a power of which she was a straying force, an invisible beauty, goal of the world's desire, a sun of which all knowledge is a being, a greatness without whom no life could be. Thence all departed into silent self, and all became formless and pure in there. Then, through a tunnel duct in the last rock, she came out where there shone a deathless sun. Her house was there, all made of flame and light, and crossing a wall of gorgeous living fire. There, suddenly, she met her secret self.
Thank you. So this journey through the inward path of the cave, through room and room, through door and rock-hewn door, has a transforming effect on Savitri. She feels herself made one, identified with everything that she sees. She knows it by identity. And then she knows who she is, that she herself is the beloved of the Supreme. And these gods and goddesses are symbols of he and she. She herself is identified with the mother of beauty and delight, with the creative word, the word in Brahma's vast creating plan. There are wonderful sculptures of these two, he and she, in embracing and in their trance of ecstasy, creating the world. In India, these things have really been expressed in form. That's who Savitri is. She's the word, the great creative word. And she's the world puissance, the power, creative power of the world. She's identified with the master and the mother, the two in one, the master and the mother of all lives, watching the worlds their twin regard has made. By their power of sight, they have created all this. Krishna and Radha, forever entwined in bliss, the adorer and the adored, self-lost and one, in a trance of adoration. This is the two in one. But then, in the last chamber, on a golden seat, one sat, whose shape no vision could describe. Savitri feels the presence, the very powerful presence there of that one, but it's not possible to see or define a shape for it. Only one felt that here is the world's unattainable mount. This is the source from which everything in the world flows. A power of which she, Savitri, feels herself as a wandering force of that power. She's aware of an invisible beauty, goal of the world's desire. We don't know really what we are longing for. That's what it is. A sun of which all knowledge is a single beam, a greatness without whom no life could be, the one, the Supreme Divine Mother. And then there are no more forms. Everything vanishes, departed into a state of silent self. All became formless and pure and bare. And then there's a tunnel which she knows she has to pass through. Tunnel dug in the last rock of the cave. She came out into some kind of light and opening where there shone a deathless sun. A house was there, all made of flame and light. And she crosses over a wall of doorless living fire. And there, suddenly, she met her secret soul.
What does she mean by a deathless sun?
A deathless sun. Oh, it's an eternal sun. It's not one which comes and goes. And it signals immortality, infinity, eternity. Sun of truth and knowledge.
Is the black sun?
This is not the black sun.
Not the black sun.
I don't think so.
It's not the black sun. It's not the black sun.
himself.
No, it's a deathless son.
The elephant,
deathless and our son, which is a symbol also, at the southern point finishes. It burns literally up, it collapses, all that whole thing. This son never dies, simply there.
But this son is a physical son. But I read recently,
it's this son when she starts to identify, the going through the tunnel is the identification with the soul now. You see it first and then you have to identify with it, which is something else. So it is as if you go through a tunnel. When you come out, then you have that sun there, which is, yes, it's there. It will always be there, because you know it, it's eternal. Yeah. Something like that you should feel.
Thank you.
I think.
Do you like to read? No. Margaret, would you read?
And he stood immortal and transient, deathless, dwelling with momentary things, in whose wide eyes of tranquil, which pity and sorrow could not abrogate, infinity turned its gaze on finite shapes, observer of the silent steps and the hours, eternity uphold the minute acts and the passing scenes of the everlasting spirit. In the mystery with selecting the divine comedy a participant, the spirit's conscious representative, God's delegate in our humanity, comrade of the universe, the transcendence ray. She had come into the mortal body's room to play a role with time and circumstance, a joy in the world, her master movement, the passion of the game lighted her eyes, a smile on her lips. Welcome, earth's bliss and grief. Her love was her return to pleasure. All things she saw as a masquerade, truth, disguise in the costumes of ignorance. Crossing the years to immortality, all she could front with a strong spirit's teeth. But since she knows the toil of mind, as a mother feels and shares her children's lives, she puts forth a small portion, a being no bigger than the sum of man, into a hidden reach of the heart, praise the, and to forget the bliss, to share the suffering, and endure earth's gloom, and labor with the labor of this love, suffers the stroke, exults in victory, struggles for it, identified with the mind and body and life. It takes on itself their anguish and defeat, bleeds with fate's whips and hangs upon the cross, yet is an unwounded and immortal self, supporting the actor in the humanity. Through this, she sends us her glory and her powers, pushes to wisdom's heights, through misery's scars. She gives us strength to do our daily tasks and simplicity that partakes of others' grief. The little strength we have to help our race, we who must fill the role of the universe, acting itself out in a slight human shape, and on our shoulder carrying the struggling world, this in us, the God that's more and more, in this human portion of divinity, she seeds the greatness of the soul in time, to uplift from light to light, from power to power, till on a heavenly peak it stands. Embodying me, in its heart an invincible mind, climbs stumbling, held up by an unseen hand, royal spirit, in a mortal shape. Here, in this chamber of flame and light, saying that they looked upon it, knew themselves, the secret deity, the human heart, the calm, immortal, and the struggling then, with the magic transformations, they rushed into and through them.
We can say thanks to Sri Aurobindo for sharing with us this remarkable piece of occult knowledge, of soul knowledge. It's a key moment in the poem. Tinaka, would you like to read next?
Once more she was human upon earthly soil. In the muttering night, amid the rain-swept woods and the rude cottage where she sat in trance, that subtle world withdrew deeply within, behind the sun veil of the inner sight. But now the half-opened lotus bud of her heart had bloomed and stood disclosed in the earthly ray. In an image shone, revealed her secret soul, no mystic fence guarding from the claims of life. In its deep lotus home, her being sat, as if on concentration's marble sea, calling the mighty mother of the worlds to make his earthly tenement her house. As in a flash from a supernal light, a living image of the original power, a face, a form came down into her heart and made of it its temple and pure abode. But when its feet had touched the quivering room, a mighty movement rocked the inner space, as if a world were shaken and found its soul. Out of the inconscious soulless, mindless night, a flaming serpent rose, released from sleep. It rose, billowing its coils, and stood erect, and climbing mightily, stormily on its way, it touched her sentence with its flaming mouth, as if a fiery kiss had broken fiery kiss had broken their sleep. They bloomed and laughed, surcharged with light and bliss. Then, at the crown, it joined the eternal space, in the flower of the head, in the flower of matter's base. Each divine strong and nature knot, it held together the mystic stream with joints, the viewless summits with the unseen death, the strings of forts that make the frail be better, safeguarding us against the enormous world, our lines of self-expression in its vast.
Thank you. So Savitri finds herself once more in the little hut in the forest. Once more she was human upon earthly soil in the muttering night. You remember it had been raining. It was the end of the rainy season. Amid the rain-swept woods, there she is in that rude cottage where she sat in trance. So that subtle world which she's been moving in since she entered the cave withdrew deeply within, behind the sun veil, the light of the inner sight. But now the half-open lotus bud of her heart had bloomed and stood disclosed to the earthly ray. It has opened and become obvious even in the material world, at least in image form. In an image shone, revealed her secret soul. Now there's no wall separating the soul and the mind. There's no mystic fence protecting it from the claims of life. But in its deep lotus home, her being sat as if on concentration's marble seat. And she's invoking presence of the mother that she's just experienced, calling the mighty mother of the worlds to make this earthly tenement, this body, her house. And when she does that, it's as if a lightning flash from a supernal light, a living image of the original bulk of the mother, a face, a form, comes down into Savitri's heart and made that heart its temple, its pure abode, its home. But when the feet of that living image touched this open lotus, this quivering bloom in her heart, it's as if there's a kind of earthquake, a mighty movement rocked the inner space, as if a world were shaken and found its soul. There's been that descent. A living image has come down into her heart. Now there's an ascent out of the inconscious, soulless, mindless night. Flaming serpent rolls, released from sleep. The touch of those feet has released that sleeping serpent. It rose, billowing its coils, and stood erect and climbing mightily, stormily on its way. It touched her centers with its flaming mouth, as if a fiery kiss had broken their sleep. Then all these centers, the chakras, bloom, laugh, surcharged with light and bliss. It's so much, it's difficult for them to contain. And up it comes at the crown. There, the serpent with its mouth joined the eternal's space. In the flower of the head, in the flower of matter's base, at the base of the spine, in each divine stronghold and nature knot, the whole series of chakras, that serpent held together the mystic stream of energy which joins the viewless summits, which we cannot see above, and the unseen depths below, which are also invisible for us. But together, this is a string of force of stronghold that make the frail defense, safeguarding us against the enormous world. They are our protection, and at the same time, they are the expression, our lines of self-expression in the vastness of the world. Devan, what do you read?
An image set of the original power, wearing the mighty mother's form and face, armed, bearer of the weapon and the sign, whose occult might no magic can imitate. Manifold, yet one, she sat, a guardian force, a savior gesture, stretched a lifted arm, and symbol of some native cosmic strength. A sacred beast lay prone below her feet, a silent, flame-eyed mass of living foe. All underwent a high celestial change, breaking the black, incongruous, blind, mute wall, effacing the circles of the ignorance. Powers and divinities burst flaming forth. Each part of the being, trembling with delight, lay overwhelmed with tides of happiness and saw her hand in every circumstance and felt her touch in every limb and cell. In the country of the lotus of the head, which thinking mind has made its busy space, in the castle of the lotus puts the bros, whence it shoots the arrows of its sight and will. In the passage of the lotus of the throat, where speech must rise, and the expressing mind and the heart's impulse run towards word and act, a glad uplift and a new working gain. The immortal's thoughts displace our bounded views. The immortal's thoughts, earth's drag idea and sense. All things now bore a deeper, heavenlier sense. A glad, clear harmony marked their truth's outline. Reset the balance and measures of the world. Each shape showed its occult design. Unveiled God's meaning in it for which it was made. And the vivid splendor of his artist thought. A channel of the mighty mother's choice, the immortal's will took into its calm control our blind or erring government of life. A loose republic, once of wants and needs, then bowed to the uncertain sovereign mind. Life now obeyed to a diviner rule, and every act became an act of God. In the kingdom of the lotus of the heart, love, chanting pure millennial hymn, made life and body mirrors of sacred joy, and all emotions gave themselves to God.
Thank you. Sonia, do you like to go on?
In the navel lotus rose imperial range, its felt ambitions and its master's lust contained into instruments grave calm sway to do a work of God, of earthly soul. It denied neither senses petty parts, a childish game of daily bar desires was changed into a sweet and boisterous game, a romp of little gods with life in time in a deep place where once the serpent slept, became a grip of matter's giant powers for large utilities in life's little space. Firm ground was made for heaven's descending mind. Behind all reigned the sovereign deathless soul, casting aside the ignorance, added to God's and cosmic beings and powers, to build the harmony of its human state, surrendered into the great world mother's hands. Only she obeyed soul supremely in the enigma of the inconscient world.
Thank you. Were you able to follow this series of the chakras and the powers of each of them? Can maybe have another look at it next week in more detail to explore all these things. Larry, would you read on from line 301?
A secret soul behind sporting all is master and witness of our ignorant life, admits the person's look and nature's role. But once the hidden doors are flung apart, then the veiled king steps out in nature's front. A light comes down into the ignorance. Its heavy, painful knot loosens its grasp. The mind becomes a mastered instrument, and life a hue and figure of the soul. All happily grows towards knowledge and towards bliss. A divine puissance then takes nature's place and pushes the movements of our body and mind, possessor of our passionate hopes and dreams, the beloved despot of our thoughts and acts. She streams into us with her unbound force, into mortal limbs, the immortal's rapture and power. An inner law of beauty shapes our lives. Our words become the natural speech of truth. Each thought is a ripple on a sea of light. Then sin and virtue leave the cosmic abyss. They struggle no more in our delivered hearts. Our acts chime with God's simple natural good, or serve the rule of a supernal rank. All moods unlovely, evil, and untrue forsake their stations in fierce disarray and hide their shame in the subconscious dust. Then lifts the mind a cry of victory. O soul, my soul, we have created heaven. Within we have found the kingdom here of God, this fortress built in a loud, ignorant world. Our life is entrenched between two rivers of light. We have turned space into a gulf of peace and made the body capital of bliss. What more, if more must still be done in the slow process of the evolving spirit, in the brief stay between a death and birth, a first perfection stage, its reach at last. Out of the wood and stone of our nature's stuff, a temple is shaped, where the high gods could live, even if the struggling world is left outside. One man's perfection still can save the world. There is one, a new proximity to the skies, a first betrothal of the earth to heaven, a deep concordat between truth and life, a camp of God is pitched in human time.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.